Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. I am so excited to have you back with us. I am Janine Ledford, your keynote speaker on intercultural creativity, neurosomatic creativity, and our huge one-of-a-kind leadership training program, Prismatic Leadership. I'm excited to be talking all things thought leadership, creativity, cultural development, and how to spot those gems in a life well lived. Those of you who have been following the show know that I bring to you the top thought leaders, the most interesting, unique people with the most amazing perspectives. And today is no different. Today, I have with me the amazing, brilliant, and beautiful Tori Danner, a graduate of MFA acting program in from CalArts, yay, CalArts. And she's an LA-based actress, and she's a voice artist. I would love for her to do one of my books one day. And she's a writer and producer who was born in Nigeria and raised in the Middle East, spending 23 of her life years in Kuwait. She's focused her last years there as a talk show host on a national television station and radio broadcast. She's known for her ongoing Morenki, how do you say that?
Morenki.
In CBS sitcom Bob Hart's Abby Sola.
Yes,
I should have practiced this before, but thank you.
That's all right.
Through her talent and her unique story, Tori hopes to encourage people to really get out of their comfort zones and to pursue their passions. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast, Tori.
Thank you so much, Janine. It's honestly such an honor to be here. So thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I have the most creative, unique people on the show because people really need to hear your stories, to be inspired, to see how you look at the world in a unique way. And I met you through a mutual friend, Miss Anna, who just raved about just your journey. And I knew that I had to really have you share it on this show, but also really pull out the gems that can help people in their own life really maneuver just through life. So if you can give someone a back or give our audience a background about who you are, and we'll start there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So a little bit about me. I was born in Nigeria, moved to Kuwait when I was 2 years old. And so I've never been back to Nigeria. So all I know of Nigeria is the stories of my grandma and my mom would tell me growing up. But when people ask me where home is, I always say Kuwait. And I was from kindergarten to the sixth grade, my mom had me and my sisters in an Indian school. So really random fact, I speak a bit of Hindi because we had to learn Hindi in school. And then she moved us to a private British school. Now, mind you, before moving to the British school, from kindergarten to the sixth grade, I had what was called anxiety-induced mutism. And so essentially what that was I would get incredibly anxious when I'd be out in public, when people would ask me questions, nothing would come out. And it was really scary because there was this need and desire to connect with people, but I felt like I didn't have the tools and I didn't know how to. So my middle sister, Ollie, her and I have always been really close. And so what would happen was everywhere we went, I would just follow her. I'd be her tail and we'd go around and people just saw me as a sister who was mute. And you'd be like, oh, your sister's mute. And that's what they would say, you know, because they had never heard my voice. And I remember just the early years being in the Indian school, I really struggled because the school my mom had us in was incredibly academic and my sisters were thriving. And I don't know if you know much about a Nigerian like family or Nigerian upbringing. It's, let's just say my mom is very strict with us and we were given a few options as to what we wanted to be, you know, when we graduate, whether we want to be a doctor, an engineer, what was the other one? A lawyer. Those were the three options that I knew that I had. And it was difficult because I just wasn't that academic student and I was barely passing my biology. I was barely passing my math. And so I was really struggling in the Indian system and my mom saw that. So she shifted us to a private British school. And the focus in that school was, it was centered around like creating just well-rounded students and focuses on extracurriculars like the drama, the sewing class and the sports and all of that. And that was fantastic because now that I've stepped into this space, it's this thing of, okay, yes, we have the academics and we have different routes as to like help the student, but we also have the arts. And I was never exposed to that. And I remember my first day of seventh grade in this British school, I look at my timetable and I see this thing called drama on the timetable and I had no idea what it was. And so go to the class, mind you, I'm the one in the class that doesn't talk. I sit in the back, no one notices me. And I remember the first day of drama class, we had this incredible teacher. His name is Larry Marks, South African guy. And he says, everyone is going to do a monologue on our first day of class. And we don't know what a monologue is. And so he explains what that is to us. And as he explains it, I start to panic because I'm understanding that it means that I have to go up on stage by myself and tell a story and let my voice be heard. Things that I just don't do. And so I remember at some point as he has us go off to like prepare for 15 minutes, I muster up the courage to go to him and say, can I go last? And that's all I can say is, can I go last? Because I'm thinking we're 25 students. We're not going to have enough time for all of us to get through and I'll escape. I'm going to run to the bathroom. I'm going to like fake some type of, you know, ailment or something. And I remember thinking I have this plan like in my head, I'm just going to escape. And it's a second to last person going up and somehow we have like 10 minutes left of class or something. And so I think to myself, you know what? I have to do this. I have to face my fears and I have to go up there. And so I remember walking up to the stage and sitting down and looking at my classmates, looking at my teacher at the back of the classroom. And all of a sudden I had this thought of, you can just tell any story and you can be anyone that you want to be in this moment. And there was something so freeing in that revelation. And for the first time, I felt like I could breathe freely. And so I just start telling the story for the next 10 minutes of the class. I start telling the story. And I remember the teacher had to stop me because I couldn't, like, it was as if all the things I'd wanted to say all these years finally came out. And people in my class were looking at me like, how, who, what, you know, this is the girl that hasn't spoken a word. And here she is telling this whole elaborate story and going full in character. And it was a one woman show essentially. And so I remember at the end of class, my teacher dismisses everyone. And he says, I want you to stay back because I want to talk to you. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm in trouble because I totally ignored the time limit. And maybe that was disrespectful. I don't know what I've done. And wow. I remember him just looking at me and saying, oh, you've done this in your previous school, the school that you're coming from. You've had training in this, right? And I'm like, no, I've never done anything like this. I've never spoken out loud like this. And even in that moment, I look back and even in interacting with my teacher at that moment, that wasn't something that I did. You know, I had never had that experience of expressing my emotions or expressing just what was going on internally with anyone outside of my sister or my mom, you know? So that was a new experience entirely for me as well. And so he looks at me, I don't think he believed me that I hadn't done this. And he says, well, you have a gift and I'm going to pull it out of you. And I remember those words so clear, I'm going to pull it out of you. And so it was this journey. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh, you're giving me. Because maybe, you know, because the last time we spoke, it was almost what, like 2-3 months ago. It's been a while since I've seen you. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. It was... You are almost the epitome of my life's work. You know? And we haven't even gotten to the rest of the story. So I hope you all are listening well, because this is definitely one for the books. I just want to pull out. Number one, we kind of have this connection where I grew up with a serious stutter growing up. I too have a twin who won speech debates and poetry contests, and here I am, couldn't even say my name fluently, and it affected my identity. Right? They say the stutter is the iceberg of that you see, and the whole anxiety and identity issues are underneath, you know, the surface level. And so I was dealing with that, and just so. Yeah, what were you carrying during your mutism? Like, how did you view yourself and your ability to be creative, as that was not as speaking was not a tool that you were using at that time?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's interesting that you bring up the just that word identity, because that's something that I struggled with up until my adulthood, and maybe just even a few years ago, and having to really address that and ask myself the hard questions of who am I? Let's take the acting aside. Let's take all of this aside, but at the core, who am I? And it was hard for me being in my adulthood and not really knowing the answer, because yes, I had this speech impediment and I couldn't speak. And I saw the way people treated me. People didn't see me, whereas people saw my sisters because they were excelling in school. My mom, even at home, I had a very hard time at home. I had a very hard time relating with my mom because I felt like so much of my worth was tied to my success in school. And I wasn't succeeding in school the way I thought I needed to be in the household that I was coming from. And so it was hard. It was hard. And I remember there were many times where I would just get on my knees and pray and ask God to end it, because I didn't see any worth in my life, you know. And it's emotional to think that I was in a place like that, but that was my reality then. And so here I am now finding my voice because of this drama class, right? Yeah. And that was interesting, because now I can speak, but not necessarily mean that I'm getting connected to who I am or my identity, because now I'm finding these characters to hide behind. I'm finding these stories to hide behind, and it almost using it as like my shield, because I'm afraid of people really getting to see the real me. I couldn't see the real me. I didn't know who I really was. And so it was just so easier to hide behind these characters. Right. And so it's been such a journey. It's taken therapy. It's taken just being honest and transparent with my friends and my community, and just being like, I don't know. And that's okay that I don't know, but I want to find out, and walking out that journey of what does that look like?
Yeah. So I don't want you to go too far too fast, because I really want to unpack this drama aspect for our listeners. So you did move, you moved schools, and I definitely want to highlight that, because as you know, I'm pretty sure there's parents and caretakers and mentors and coaches watching, people who are in charge of people who are still in their formative years. And as you know, the research shows the most critical period of a person's life is from 0 to 4, right? Brain wise and structure wise. But then that 0 to 12 is very, very important. So understanding your mother, even though it was a strict household, you know, you got 3 choices, which I'm hearing from some of my friends. I went to UCLA, and so I had a lot of people who are just driven by academics. Like that, you're right. That's how they solidified their worth, which I believe is adding to the anxiety. We have high numbers of, suicide rates or ideation, right? Suicidal ideations and depressiveness and depression. And so I think our system has to do some work around that area for sure. But that your mom actually made the move. There's other parents who are like, hey, you're here, you stay here, and this is what we believe in, so do it. And exactly. Where would you have been? Because I'm excited for people to get to the rest of your story. But had she not made that move, you know, what the trajectory would have been skewed, right? Or you just would have made it in another area. I don't know. But would you have felt a life of purpose in what you were truly called to do? You know?
That's good. Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I recently was thinking about that like a week ago. What would that have looked like if I never moved? What would that look like if I continued to stay in that space where I just had to constantly feel like I had to struggle and barely survive in a space where I wasn't understood, in a space where I was told that I was less than or I wasn't smart enough, you know. And I'm so thankful because my mom did the best of what she had. And I'm so thankful that she saw that this child is struggling and she needs to be in a space where her strengths can be pulled out and can be recognized and she can really thrive and grow. And I'm so thankful to that, because I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, doing what I'm doing now in terms of the acting and just really finding myself just being elevated and thriving in the entertainment industry, I'm so aware and I have no doubt in my mind that this is what I was created to do. Yeah.
So, because I'm trying to like, don't go too far. We have to it's like a movie, right? And so just one more point before we do move on is, if she had not moved you, would that norm had set in as your default? Like, this is the way life is. I am just not good enough. This is it. And then when people get into a place where they just lose hope, and that's when you find your 40-year-old who just never found themselves, and they're working at a job they hate. They're just going through routine, and then they're 80 and then they're gone. Yeah. But your mom made the move. And so I really want to highlight that of parents and caretakers and mentors and coaches about the importance of being observant of how your dependents and your peers or your sisters or brothers or whoever's in your life, you know, just being that word of encouragement and being observational. So then you made the move and you're like, what's this drama? Like, what is this? Is this like issues on my schedule? Like, what does that mean? Right. And then you're at the back of the class. You panic. You try to, you know, finagle. And then you said to yourself, you said, I said to myself, what did you say again to bring us back there?
Yeah, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I remember the fear, because I'd never myself in a position of I'm terrified, but despite the fear, I can do hard things. Mm-hmm. And pushing myself past that place of I'm just going to escape like I've always done. I'm just going to escape. I'm going to run out. And so instead of sitting in that place, I remember just feeling the sense of I need to stand up. I need to give myself this opportunity. And so that's what really pushed me towards walking towards that stage.
So I'm like, and my turn. I'm like, because this is like, I could seriously, I think I told you this on our first conversation. Yeah. I could literally write a dissertation about your story. It's that good. And I just pulled this from my professor at UCLA, Dr. Michael Lieberman, who is like now the father of social neuroscience or something. Like back then, he was just Dr. Lieberman. But this was in like 24 years ago, right? So he's done some pretty significant work. And I pulled this yesterday for research for the book we're doing next year called I Am. Okay. And the neuroscience behind declarations, right? And speaking to yourself. Mm-hmm. And it says self-affirmation alters the brain's response to health messages and subsequent behavior change. So here's the neuroscience behind what happened to you. You stopping, you probably controlling your emotions and regulating down to calm down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then speaking to yourself, right? And I love T.D. Jakes' quotes, or his quote about a story in the Bible when the prodigal son, you know, stopped and said to himself, right? And it's almost like it's not what other people are saying to you. It's what you're saying yourself. And now we have the neuroscience to prove these things actually work.
I didn't know that aspect of the neuroscience, but I, you know, being a woman of faith, know the importance and the power and significance of our words. So this is just really cool, like bringing these two things together. Thank you for sharing that with me. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, words are, I have this frequency necklace and words are energy, right? The same as the sunlight.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, it's you plug into the electrical, you know, your heart is working because of energy. And so words are powerful. And that's where I'm trying to get people to understand with this next book that's coming out next year for my family. And all it is just like, I am worthy. I am creative. I'm blessed. I'm confident, right? And we say these together every single night since my son was born. And it helped with his vocabulary too, you know. I am effective. And, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, that is so important for a child, for that to be modeled to a child from a young age, because even as you say that, it's like these things now are highlighted in my childhood of the times where I was really struggling. And yes, knowing my mom was strict, but something that was made important in the household was the things that she would say over us as kids. And I remember there were times where I would be like failing my class and my mom would come to me and she would put her hand on me and she would always say to me, she's like, you're brilliant. You are smart and you're going to pass. And she would say all these things that seemed to be the opposite of what my reality was, but that stuck with me. And I remember thinking as a child, but that's not what's happening, you know, but it got to a point where I started to take it as on as my own. And I would go to class and I naturally in the past, because of the struggles I faced, I would, you know, think I'm not going to be able to pass this. It's going to be really hard. But then I'd be reminded of what my mom would say at home of, no, you're going to be the top of your class. You're going to excel. And I noticed that, it was around like middle school, high school was when there was really a turnaround for me in my education and even my grades. And I feel like for the first time in my life, I'm able to make that connection that it was so deeply rooted in my confession, like what I was speaking over myself and what I was believing over myself. So
huge, huge. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for helping join those dots. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you know the story, Charlotte's Web. I like
that. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
People who grew, you didn't grow up in America, you can't assume that they, you know, how do you not know Disney? You know, you know, but you are in the entertainment field. But if you remember, Charlotte the Spider spoke over Wilbur and really changed Wilbur's identity. Right. And I do this whole certification program with educators on how to bring the arts into their content. And yeah, just I chose that part to choreograph a whole dance around, and we had like words, and it was beautiful. I do have it like on YouTube somewhere, but yeah, that when you said your mom speaking over you, and I sing over my son every night, you know, God, Lord bless you, you know, like the whole that song, and it matters because I heard the parents or the caretaker's voice within a child's life becomes their inner voice in their adult life.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And that's powerful. It's like if caretakers and parents were conscious and aware of that and had that at the forefront of your mind, I feel like there would be a lot of change that's happening.
Yeah. And there'll be a lot of better emotional regulation and creativity and risk-taking. So that's where I want to get, like, I'm seriously, I should write your book. It's just so great. So now you're in drama class and you're up, you're just, and you speak to yourself, you self-affirm yourself mentally, and then you go for it. I want to tell people that the strength of who you are is often revealed in the struggle. Right. Overcoming. And that's what you did. And you just, it just flowed out of you. There's something about the DNA of walking in your purpose and what you are, what you believe that you were called to do. It just comes out of you almost without any effort. Right.
Right. Exactly. Wow. I love what you said, Janine, just now. The strength of who you are is often revealed in the struggle. I mean, you are preaching here. And I'm like, where's that notebook? I need to write this down.
That's what I told a previous guest. I was like, I think I have to go back and re-listen to this show.
These are gems.
Well, my job is to listen to people's story and highlight these gems, some things that you don't even realize are gems. And then the last part before I want you to continue on is a story of if those words that your teacher said, I probably need to put them on a shirt. What did he say to you at the very end?
He said, I'm going to pull it out. He's like, what you have, I'm going to pull it out. And I remember him specifically saying, I'm going to pull it out, because I remember thinking to myself, pull what out? you know, because I didn't understand that what I had shown in that moment was just a raw talent. And here this man is, who's been teaching this class for years, is saying, I see what is in you and I'm going to pull it out.
Yeah. And what's his name again?
Larry Marks, Mr. Okay. Larry.
I mean, just give him props. I might even ask you permission to put you in one of my keynotes, because this is a powerful story. Right now, I use the story of the student who just kept tapping Clint Pulver. You can go look online and see his story as well. I might send him the link, but he was just tapping, got in trouble every year from his teachers. His classmates are annoyed at him because he's just, you know, disrupting. And then he has that teacher that says, Clint, stay after class. Everyone leaves. He thinks like you, like, I'm in trouble. I'm going to get sent to principal's office again. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, you're not in trouble. I think you're a drummer. And he reached in his desk and pulled out two drumsticks and put it in his hand, changed this boy's life. He travels the world drumming for the top bands and now is a public speaker. He speaks to schools as well. You can look him up. He's everywhere now. And he tells people to be a Mr. Jensen. And the reason why I love your story and his story, and I'm probably going to flip both because also your demographics as well, is our job as teachers and as parents is and that's why I love that quote, and I need to quote him, is to pull it out. We need to observe and shift perspective and be curious.
Yes.
You know, and Mr. Jensen could have easily said, you know, stop drumming, go to the, you know, sit on your hands or whatever, along the same lines of the story that Sir Ken Robinson shares in his TED talk about Gillian Lynn, the dancer and the choreographer of Cat. You know, they thought she had an issue because she couldn't stop moving. You know, so how do we better observe, especially those of us who work with the developing minds, which we're all developing at every stage of life. But this is for leaders in corporate. How do we observe our team members better? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I love what you said of being curious, and I laugh because this is something that would kind of annoy my family, because I'm very curious about everything. And at home, even though initially as a child, I wouldn't really talk outside, but at home, I always ask questions of why. But why? Yes, I know this is the norm, but why? And even in my adult life, when I meet people and I see certain behaviors and the way people go through and interact in life, I always want to know the why. And I think that is the key. The curiosity, instead of shutting it down and putting people in boxes. And it's something that I noticed so much here, especially here in America. People are so quick to categorize people and put them in a box because it's easier to understand and it's easier to just process that way, instead of asking the why and wanting to know people's stories. And so I think that's incredibly important. Something that I've noticed as a Black woman in America, people are so quick to look at me and categorize me as an African-American woman, not knowing my story, not knowing that I'm fluent in Arabic, not knowing that I can speak multiple languages, not knowing where I'm coming from, that I just moved to America a few years ago, you know, and it's like, but if you took a moment to be curious and ask the questions, you would know. And so I think that's the key to it, being curious. Yeah.
Yes. And that's why it's one of the seven gems of intercultural creativity, being curious. And I love that. And just the last point is just being in that position, that leadership position of pulling it out. The Latin etymology of parent is to bring forth.
Right? Oh, wow.
I know. I'm dropping them. I believe that's of a leader. I don't know. I guess I should look up the etymology of leadership. But to bring forth, that's really our job, is to bring the prismatic colors out. You know, those reds, those greens, those yellows, of letting you shine with your beautiful frequencies coming out. And I love that. So after you have done your monologue and you've wowed everyone, what's next?
So have this conversation with my teacher. And then he says, you know, I want to bring it out. And then I'm dismissed to go into the rest of my day. And I remember everything. It's so interesting, Janine, because you just talked about color, but I remember leaving that classroom and going about my day, which would have seemed like mundane or routine. Everything just seemed so much more vivid. Everything just like a world that I was living in that seemed to be like gray, the blacks and whites, all of a sudden had color. Because I, for the first time in my life, felt like, oh, you have purpose and you're good at something. And it's worth taking time for. It's worth stopping for and pointing out. And so that was hugely impactful to me. Yeah. So I remember that day just being really special. And I was just like in the best mood. And I went home and I started like talking to my classmates and asking them their names and being like introducing myself to them now. It was just freeing. It was so freeing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that quote of the most important day is the day you were born. And the second one is the day you find out why.
Right. That's what that was. I found out why that day. Yeah. And so, you know, that's in the seventh grade, mind you. And so I was in the British system. So I did like A levels, which is what we call. So we don't just have 12 grades like the American system. We have 13 grades. So I went up to the 13th grade. And I remember in that final year, really just having my own struggle because I wanted to pursue acting. But then there was also this fear of, if I pursue that and that doesn't work out for me, I don't necessarily have something to fall back on. So I will make a long story short. I ended up deciding to stay in Kuwait and getting my undergrad in mass communications and media. And also because my mom had also she just didn't think I was ready to go to America yet and pursue a career in acting. Because I mean, I get it. I look back and the things that we heard in the news about people in the entertainment industry just wasn't the best, you know. And she was just like, I don't know about you. I don't know if you have your head on screwed on right yet. So let's have you stay here so I can keep an eye on you. And so there was nothing like getting an undergrad or anything like that in acting in the Kuwait. There's nothing like that. So I had to choose the one thing that I felt like I could succeed in. And so I went to the American University of Kuwait and I studied journalism and was working towards being an investigative journalist. And even my time there, I remember thinking, this is not necessarily what I am passionate about and not necessarily what I want to do, but this is the closest thing to what I want to do. And so I just threw myself in it because another thing that I really believed in was that if I'm going to say yes to something and I'm going to commit to something, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability and I'm going to give excellence in anything that I do. And so I remember my first year in that university, the person who was mentor was also the head of the communications department. And he really took a liking to me. And he had called me into his office one day and he was like, I want to introduce you to somebody who is like a high up executive in the Ministry of Interior. The Ministry of Interior is what all the radio stations are under, the TV stations are under. And he's like, I would like to introduce you to him because I feel like you have a lot of potential. And I remember thinking, this is radical favor for him to be saying, I want you, because people don't even step foot in the Ministry of Interior. That's just not something that happens, especially women, you know? And so the significance of that, I was very, very well aware of that. So fast forward to meeting this person, the executive at the Ministry of Interior was like this whole like ordeal to get in the building. I had to go through so many security checks and everything. But then I get there and I meet with this man and he says, you know, your mentor has spoken really highly of you and how dedicated you are to your work and how eloquent you are. And I want to give you the opportunity of having your own talk show. And yes, it was crazy. And I remember sitting in that office and just being as on the surface, trying to be as calm as I possibly could. And inside of me, screaming, like, how does this happen to me? You know?
What?
And yeah. And then it was like a few weeks after that meeting that I started my talk show. And I had a friend that I co-hosted it with. And it was called In Touch. And it spotlighted artists all throughout the Middle East. Now, the understanding that I had with doing the show was that I would be the face of it and I would host it with my friend, but it meant that I would have to carry the whole project as well. So it meant that I had to look for the guests. I had to make sure that they were flown in. I had to make sure that they were brought into the, so I was doing everything. And I didn't realize that the role that I was also filling in was a role of a producer. I didn't know that's what a producer does, you know? So that was a process. And I did that for 2 years. And it was absolutely incredible. Also worked on the news, also worked on radio as well. And it just opened up so much opportunity to me. And this show was the only one of its kind, because there is a bit of a stigmatism towards the arts. And so it was the only one of its kind that spotlighted the artists in the Middle East. And we'd fly people in from Qatar, from Bahrain, people within Kuwait, and just really highlight them. So we'd have like violinists, poets, and I'd talk about, you know, and just question and ask about their journey, their artistic journey. What does that look like? And it was amazing because it's on this like one English station in Kuwait. And so I would go out and I'd meet people who are my age that would look to me and say, I watch your show and this has encouraged me to pick up the guitar. This has encouraged me to write. It was just so empowering. So empowering to do that.
So let's pause there because like I said, you're a woman full of jewels. Like people can go through a 6-week course to how to better your life through the life. And I want to talk about the difference between mentorship and sponsorship. Mm-hmm. Right. So mentorship is when you position yourself to just really give advice to people, to share some perspectives about their journey. Right. But sponsorship is a whole other level. I did the closing keynote at Women in Medicine. I did three, like Women in Leadership and Women in Electronics. But this one was the Women in Medicine at the Drake in Chicago. And they had a wonderful presentation on the difference. And what she said was sponsorship is not just giving you advice, is saying, hey, you should go apply to go speak at a conference. Sponsorship is saying, you know, here's the application. Let me write you a letter of rec. Or, you know what, I know the event planner. I'm going to submit your name as well. That's what happened to you. He didn't say, hey, you should think about, you know, looking up this random person. He literally walked you in.
Yes.
That's right. A sponsor. And Where would any of us be without key sponsors in our life?
Right. That's so good. Thank you for pointing that out, the difference. It's not something that I even thought of at all. But that's what he did. That's what my mentor did for me. He sponsored, you know, and the doors were just flung open for me. And I think that last year that I was in Kuwait, I had realized that I had reached my ceiling, to be honest. And there wasn't much more room for growth. And I remember while I was hosting the show, I was still in school, right? So reaching my final year of school, about to graduate with my degree. And I remember just praying and just like sitting and talking with my sister and thinking, okay, where do I go from here? Because I know that there is so much inside of me that has yet to be unlocked. And I don't want to sit in this place of just, this is comfortable, because this is not comfortable. And I can continue to be in this place, making good money, you know, being well-recognized in the country. But I knew that I wanted to be able to tap into all that was inside of me. And so I remember praying, talking to my sister, going to bed and waking up. And this may sound woo-woo to some people, but I had a dream. And I think some of the most pivotal just changes and decisions that I have made in my life have been based off of like some really radical dreams that I've had. And I remember having a dream, and in the dream all I saw was like a white background, and in black letters was CalArts. And I remember thinking, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to look it up. And I look it up and I see that it's an arts institute in California. Mm-hmm. And it's like has an 11% acceptance rate. And, you know, it's a conservatory for like where you can get your MFA or BFA. And I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, my goodness, this is where I'm supposed to go next. This is my answer. And I looked at the application for that semester, the fall semester, and I saw that it was literally 2 days to the deadline to submit everything that you need. And it was a lot that they were asking. I remember panicking and thinking, I can't do this. I don't have, the only training that I had was the drama class in high school. I don't have any official training. I don't have any bachelor's in acting. I don't like, do I even remember how to act, you know? And I remember calling my sister And I'm so thankful for this girl. I'm so thankful for my sister, because at this point I'm like, I have this dream and I know it's significant, but I don't have the qualifications that are required for this, for the application to submit for the MFA program. And I remember her saying, you have this dream and you know the significance of your dreams and you need to apply. And if it means me helping you, we're going to do it together. Write that essay. I'll edit it. We're doing it tonight. And I remember like crying on the phone because I was panicked. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to do this. Wipe your tears. You're going to do this. And so wrote the letter. And I remember they had asked for a video monologue. I remember the next morning I woke up, I did some improv monologue and then I sent it out. It was like, but I remember even as I was putting things together and I was looking at it, I'm like, wow, this actually looks really good. This is a strong application, as last minute as it is. And I send it out and the next phase is for them to accept for you to come to America to do the in-person audition, which is like the final stage, right? And I had the date sent to me of when they wanted to come see me. And I had applied to some other schools because I'm like, if this doesn't work out, I need a plan B. And so did the auditions for the other schools. CalArts was the last one. And I remember walking in and it was clear from the moment I walked into that room that that's where I was meant to go, you know, and did the audition, did the monologue, had the interview portion. By the end of the interview, the head of the MFA acting program is like, we need you in our school. So what can we do to like make this easy? We're going to give you a scholarship, whatever you need. We need you in this school.
Wow.
And yeah.
Yeah. I want to point out, you know, it's me again, you know, with the brain.
Love it.
You know, there's three sections, not physical sections, but they talk about three sections about your cognitive, right? Section, which is your thinking, your logic, your reasoning. Then there's your affective, which is your emotional part of the brain. And then there's another section that a lot of people don't know too much about called your conative section. Have you heard of that before?
I've heard of that. Mm-mm.
Conation, right? And it's basically your ability to get things done.
Mm.
People are an example of someone or a character with low conative abilities would be like Eeyore. Like he's like, I should do this, but oh, I don't, you know, it's just like, and I don't know if you know anyone in your life like that, but they're like, yeah, I probably should, you know, I don't know, write a book or just something big. And they're like 10 years later have done nothing.
Yeah. I know a few people like that. Yeah.
And then you know, people like you and myself, they're like, you know what? I should write a kid's book, but not call it an inner kid's book. I should call it an inner child's book. And it should be about like my son being creative. You know what? Let's do it. You know, and then here we are, you know, a year later and he's signing books about I am creative. And so, and then it's a continuum, right? It's just, there's things people could do to increase their conative brain, just like you can do things to increase your cognitive brain and increase your affective brain and your emotional regulation. But we don't think about that. Why do some people get things done and other people don't? And so your conation, huge, you know, and probably a lot of your background. But also another thing I want to point out is research says that even a child who may have been going through adverse childhood experiences or something like that, if they have at least one positive voice in their life, it's a game changer.
Wow.
It's a game changer. And, you know, your mom was positive, but your sister's voice of, we're getting this done.
Absolutely. Like,
What are your thoughts about that?
That's so powerful because all it takes is one powerful voice, you know? And I'm so interested in this Kone because I've never heard of that term before, but I'm also curious to hear what are some things that affect that? What are some things that people can do to really build that? Because I know for me, the minute you said that, I immediately think of some people in my life who really struggle in that area. It's not the fact that they've been that way all their life. It's certain things that they've had happen in their life that have just contributed to discouragement or just like hope deferred that, you know, just makes it this thing of like, I have this idea, but it's probably not going to work out. So let's not. So, and that's it's hopeful to me to hear that there are things that can be done to help the conative brain. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah. It goes back, you know, the easiest, the low fruit is, you know, like setting goals and having people around you, like your sister who are speaking light into that. It's reframing past experiences. So yes, if you've had a childhood or youth experiences where the authority figures kept letting you down, there is a way for that to translate into negative conation. Well, it didn't work back then, so it's not going to work now. But if you reframe it, you know, okay, well, that didn't work out, but look, I tried this and it, you know, so you're just, it's really about the story that you're telling yourself. Everything is narrative. Everything is narrative. The brain operates through narrative. You know, you don't know who you are unless you understand the story of, you know, the story that you accept. So that's, I mean, we can do a whole other lecture on that, but there are things and people can actually go and Google it, you know, like, what do I do to strengthen the co-native brain? And so things along those lines. So you finish the audition and they're like, we need you here. Then what?
And then I remember just the meeting now wraps up and I go downstairs where my sister is waiting in the hotel, tell her all about it. And of course, she's like down there praying and everything. And we're just so excited. And I know that I'm accepted into this school, but it's also this other level of joy when I finally get the official letter saying that you've been accepted and you've been given a scholarship to come. And so this was 2016. And so the fall of 2016, I moved to America, moved to California, mind you. And my audition wasn't in California, it was in Chicago. And I chose to do it in Chicago because that's where my sisters live. And so prior to that, I'd never been to California in my life. So I remember moving out here for school and just thinking like having like literally Googling pictures of California and seeing pictures of California. I'm like, oh, wow, that's what it looks like. It has mountains. Wow. And the beach.
And oceans. And valleys. And
all of
we
it.
We have it all.
All of it. Isn't it amazing? And so moving out here and just being incredibly excited. That first month was hard. It was hard because it was massive culture shock for me. I mean, mind you, I grew up in a very conservative society, in a also very conservative household. And now to be living on my own in an art school, I will just leave it at that, it was a major change. And I didn't know what to do with like all the freedom, you know? And so I remember calling my sister and just telling her, this is overload to my system. And I don't know if I can survive because all my life I've been taught as a woman, this is the box that you fit into. And I've known how to do that well. And now those boundaries have been removed. And what do I do? And so it was quick learning of, okay, this is where you want to be. This is what you want to do as an actor. This is the best place to do that. And you're going to have the best opportunities here. So you're going to figure it out. What does that look like? Being open, being transparent of what you're struggling with, you know, reach out to your community, lean on your community. Even if it means having like the frequent calls with your sister, you cannot suffer in silence. So vocalize. And so I got really good at that. And my community was really good at checking in on me and seeing how I was doing. And then, you know, of course, the program, I don't know if you know much about CalArts, but it's an incredibly intensive program. So we start like classes 8 a.m. and we finish at 12 midnight. And we have like maybe an hour break in between. And it's so rigorous, you know? And so
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but it was preparation and it really taught us, you know, how to build stamina in healthy ways. And initially the first year, no one in my class understood why I was so rigorous. But now that I'm in the industry, I realize, oh, this is why they had us go through a program like this, because if you're not grounded and if you're not if you don't have a sound mind, you're going to go to other alternatives to help you. You know, to be able to go through those 12-hour shoots, go through, you know, those long hours of filming. And so I'm so thankful for that program and how rigorous it was because it prepared us for the industry. So go through CalArts. I'm trying to quicken this because I'm realizing how long the story is. Go to CalArts. And graduate. And I remember the day of graduation, my mom comes, my sister comes, it's just a joyous day. And my mom has this thing where she just like speaks things with such confidence. And my sister and I sometimes laugh about it. And then later on, we see it actually play out in real life. And so I remember in the hotel room, there was this trailer for this TV show, this sitcom that was coming out called Bob Hart's Abishala. And we were in the hotel room and sitting down and laughing. And my mom looks at the TV, just stops. And she says, "Tori, you're going to be on that show." And I laugh because I'm like, "Mom, that's not how the industry works. You can't just walk on set. It's not going to be like that." And just thinking, oh, so this is what I'm in for. Now she's going to think, see any show and think, oh, you're going to be on that show. But there was something in my spirit that said, stop and listen. Listen to what she's saying. Don't dismiss this. And I remember after graduate, like, because before graduating, I had signed up the manager. And after graduating, telling my manager, look out for auditions for this show. And I was pissed. And something about me is, if I want something, you will hear from me every day. And so that's what I did with my manager. Find those auditions. And I remember a few months after graduating, found an audition for this role called Morenike, which was a guest star for one episode. And I remember seeing it, reading the lines and thinking immediately, this is mine. This is me. And I did that audition that night. And sent it in the next day, my manager's calling me saying, "Tori, they're really considering you for this role." Like this, like he wasn't expecting it because mind you, I had no credits whatsoever. Uh-huh. And he's like, "This is a secret show." And as he's speaking, I'm getting another call. And the other call is from the producer of the show saying, "Can you come in today for a COVID test?" It was so quick. My life just, it literally just changed that day. You know, and I remember going in and being so excited, so nervous because the people that are on the show are people that I grew up watching and studying the work as actors. And these are the people that I get to call friends now, like my co-stars. It's just a dream. And I remember even going in there and talking with one of the showrunners, with Gina Yashiri, who is a comedian, and honestly, I absolutely love that woman and how she's championed me and championed other women and people of color, and is such a trailblazer. But I remember her looking at me and saying, "We are going to make sure that you stay on the show," because it was like literally just for that one episode. But it was this knowing that they had of she's meant to be here, you know, and just the way that I was connecting and being able to interact and just I love people and I love getting to hear people's stories. And as I said, the curiosity, why? Tell me why, you know, why you behave this way, or tell me where you're coming from, and just hearing their stories. And they saw that was genuine and they were like, okay, we want to keep you around. And so have been on for the last three seasons, and it's just been a whirlwind and the best experience that I've ever had. And that's opened up producing and writing for me. And it's just, it's been incredible. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. So you were only supposed to be there for one episode, but they said, So I do know you are a woman of faith and you believe in God and everything. Just how do you feel that God's hand has been on your life just through these maneuvers, you know, even with your dreams and randomly, you know, randomly, quote unquote.
Yeah, his hand has been all over. And there are times where I don't even realize it. And I look back and I'm like, wait a minute, let me join the dots. This had to lead to this. And it's like, even that moment in the hotel room, and my mom said, "You're going to be on that show." It was his hand that was like, stop and listen. Because there are multiple times that my mom says things and we just laugh. We're like, oh, mom's just being mom, you know. Yeah. But it was that highlighting that allowed me to really, really press to my manager and say, "You need to really pay special attention to this show because there's something about this show for me." And I also knew that my foot getting into the industry would have to do with something niche that I could do that not many people could do. Because for this role, they were looking for someone who could speak Yoruba, somebody who could also do the accent fluently. And that's something that I can do. Not a lot of actors can do that. And so I also saw that business side of it too. And I'm like, okay, this is something that I'm good at. I can speak Arabic. I can speak the Nigerian language. I can do accents well. And so I knew that somehow, some way, it's like that, it would be my in into the industry would have to do with one of those like very particular things that I could do as well. Yeah. So
I love that. I just love just your story. And there's this one last point I want to bring up before we wrap up. Like, I can talk to you for another 2 hours, but I got to go cook dinner for the boys. Or they will be very mad at both of us. So we are looking at, you know, the past, at least in here in America. I know you're educated abroad, but, you know, it was very much of a, you know, by the time you're 18, choose what you want to do and then stick with that one thing and excel, be very specific, excel, and then retire at 65 and get your gold watch and everything. So really specific, right? You want to just hone in on one skill. Now we're looking at what creativity needs. The World Economic Forum listed creativity as now the number one skill needed in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And cognitively speaking, creativity really sits on your ability to have your ideas join and combine and then recombine and then recombine again and then get all mixed up and then recombine again. And yes. if you're solidified in one small area and you're not exposing yourself to different people, different places, different processes and operations and geographical locations, your brain has nothing really to recombine, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And so it's this generalist, right? We used to say a jack of all trade, jack of all trade, master of none, right? But now we say, jack of all trade, master of none, but woe to thee if you're just the master of one. Because the shelf life of skills are what, 3 to 5 years? Meaning what you're learning right now may be obsolete in 3 to 5 years, at least 50% of it, they're saying, especially if you're in the tech field, because everything is going so quickly.
Exactly. Yeah.
As far as the developmental periods from the Industrial Revolution and then the internet age and going on. And so I just want to highlight that part of your story of you growing up in different areas. And even if when you were in Kuwait, you still going to a British school. So that's another cultural influence there. You interviewing all these people on your talk show, everyone you interact with changes your neural networks. It changes your brain. Literally, we have proof with that, with Dr. Right. Michael Platsworth, with the Leader's Brain and other neuroscientists as well. And then your ability to have high conation, which is you just get out there and take a risk. And if it works out, let's see, you know, but that's putting you in these new experiences. And I just want to make sure people pull that out is that every time you meet someone new, and those of you who are listening to this, she is literally changing your neural networks because her story is now becoming your story. And you're seeing parts of your lived experience to my audience within her story. And so the lessons that she's pulling from her story, you're paralleling those lessons to your story if they align. And so that's why meeting people, being curious, not judging right away, but getting their stories out of them. And where have you been? What have you seen? What do you believe in and why? Right.
Yeah.
Any thoughts about that?
That's beautiful. Just what you were talking about, the changing of the neural networks. And I just have to say, you're such a brilliant educator, because even as you're sharing this and breaking this down, I'm like, I wish you were my biology teacher, you know, because I'm like, I'm able to grasp this. Yeah, but that's something that I've been talking to a lot of my friends about. You know, when people ask me for advice, I always say, do not be afraid to be bad at something. You know, I think so much of us limit ourselves because it's like, I'm not going to try this because I don't know how to do it. I've never done it before. That's okay. And so now I'm finding myself and putting myself in situations where I know that I don't have any skill set in it, but I'm going to try it because maybe I might be good at it. Maybe I might find that this is something that brings me joy. And so, you know, my sister gifted me with like a sewing machine, and now I'm sewing, and now I'm realizing this is something that I'm good at. And now I'm in the process of working on starting my own fashion line. But I would have never thought that this would be something that I would do if not for saying I'm going to try and put my best foot towards that, you know? And it's like, even with my friends, it's like, let's go to a pottery class. Let's try these things. I really have been encouraging my friends. It's like, really, just open up yourself, just open up yourself to try new things and put yourself in a position where you get to experience new things that you normally wouldn't do, because you owe that to yourself. You deserve that. And it's amazing because once you put yourself in that place, it's interesting how you're even able to relate to people differently, and your perspective on life shifts as well. It's just like what you were saying of like the brain is literally changing. And so we don't want to just stay in the same place our whole lives. We want to change and learn more, right? So that's what I would say. Yeah.
Now you keep giving me stuff to pick apart, but I have to go. And I'm like, so I just lastly want to say, just for my neural nerds out there, of something called myelination, right? Do you remember your first, do you drive? I don't want to assume.
I don't drive.
You don't? I'm glad I didn't assume. Do you ride a bike or anything? Do you know how to ride a bike?
Funny you say that, because that's something I'm currently learning how to do. I'm currently learning how to ride a bike, drive, and swim.
Okay. Well, hey, yeah. Kudos to you. But the main point I want to bring up is something called fixed mindset, growth mindset. Have you heard of those terms?
I've heard of that, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So fixed mindset, you know, either you're good or you're not. You're either smart or you're not. And so a lot of people who are raised in a fixed mindset type of culture, whether it be at the home or classroom or what have you, they believe that if I don't just start this and I'm automatically excellent, then it's just a no go. Whereas if you, and it's a continuum. So you can be fixed mindset on some things, but growth mindset on another, or somewhere in between. But people who understand about the importance of having a growth mindset is, you know what? I got this sewing machine. Let me sew this first. We had like little Barbie patterns my mom sewed. So she started us on like Barbie clothes, and like the stitch is all crazy and it's all like crossing the wrong direction. But hey, it looks awful, but I did this. Now let's start on number two. And you understand that I'm not going to get great at this the first time. It's a growth process, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really just a really simple definition of the growth mindset. But we're trying to present something called the prismatic mindset, which is the step after growth mindset of not now I'm great at this. How can I empower or encourage someone else to develop their skills in this area as well? So it's moving from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset to a prismatic mindset, where your mindset is now empowering and encouraging others to rise, right? Mm-hmm. And what you just said is that is we need to understand that when our brain is just learning something, there's not a fatty type of covering over the neural networks that allows the electricity to go faster. So when you're first, for those of you who know how to drive, if you can remember the first day that you learn, you're like, okay, which one is the brake? Which one's the gas? Okay, how do I put it into drive, right? Everything is very methodical because you haven't, it's your first day, right? Yeah. But for those of you who have been driving for 20 years, you're not even thinking about it. You get in, you turn on the radio, you're having a conversation, you're drinking your coffee all at the same time. Because that neural network has been myelinated. You've done it so many times that the brain puts around this like fatty, like substance so the electricity can move faster because you just know it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, we need to give people a chance to myelinate those neurons. And I use that term with my son. Hey, we got to myelinate those neurons. Like, yep, they're struggle at it because you're still myelinating your neurons. Like that's the conversation that we have. No, you're not going to start at this perfect, and that's okay. Just start.
Yes, that's it. We need a shirt that just says that. Just start. Start.
Yeah, start. Just start and do it.
So powerful. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I took an hour of your time. Definitely one of the longest shows that I've had.
Such a joy. I literally could keep talking to you for hours and learn from you forever. So thank you for having me. Such a joy.
Oh, thank you for sharing your story. And we are the gems, the diamonds, right? Yours is coming to you soon. But if you could leave our audience with just one gem from a life well lived so far, and I pray you have another 80 years left and still looking good, right? What's one gem that you would want to leave with our tribe?
One thing that I want to leave with you that I remind myself of every day is you can do hard things. I think if I stayed in a place back in Kuwait where I thought this is going to be hard to apply to a school with a very low acceptance rate, I would have just stayed there and I would have still been there. And I continue to find myself in this place. Like even now we're currently on strike, SAG is on strike, and we're not able to film for the show that I'm on, but I have now had these ideas for like different business ventures. And the first thing that comes up is like, oh, that's going to be hard. But despite that, I remind myself, you can do hard things, so you're going to do it. And so I want to leave you with that. Whatever that thing is that you feel like I could do, I want to try, but it's hard. And there are all these obstacles. Do it. It's hard, but you can do it.
So you can do hard things. Wow. Thank you so much. If people wanted to find you, you're building your website and writing your book. I'm just going to put that out there right now. Right now, I believe you're on Instagram.
Yes, I'm on Instagram at Tori Danner. That's TORIDANNER.
All right. So go follow her on Instagram and then check back when her website and book is out. And I hope you all just loved her story. I love her story. She's just a powerful woman, a woman of God. And it's just a wonderful gem that I found. And that's why I needed to just show her brilliance to the world. And I hope you were blessed as well. Please go check out Seven Gems of Intercultural Creativity. Go check out my son's book, My Brain, My Beautiful Brain, and I Am Creative. They look like children's books, but they're for adults as well, because adults need these lessons to get back into their spirit and their soul as well. And we will see you on the next And Create and Grow Rich podcast. Take care and create well. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's CAFFE strategies.com. This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique Prismatic Leadership Method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the seven gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.